This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Jeff Stein joining us here in a little bit. I'm actually kind of fascinated by that Michigan lawsuit against the 16 fake electors because it's very Al Capone. It's mail fraud-esque, you know, it's just, but it's got teeth, man. It's got some teeth. We'll talk to him about those things and the pathetic IRS hearing today where Republicans were, so you were upset that they weren't moving at the schedule you thought would be a more appropriate. Oh, okay. Scandal. 952-946-6205. We have to create a new public service file here for the radio station. Things we never thought we'd actually have to tell people not to do, but they keep freaking doing them. Of course, I think in the pantheon of this, don't leave your car running and leave it with the keys in it going. You just made it convenient for the thief. Don't give an unlocked cell phone to anyone as you leave the bar. All right? Okay, these are the things. Don't put fireworks in any hole on your body. All right? I don't care what you think is going to happen. It is not going to go well. And you're going to be your own public safety announcement before too long. You know, there's a reason why people get nicknames like Three Fingers, all right? Or, well, I can't even say that nickname. Anyway, but we have a new recurring problem, Brett, that we have to inform people to not do, apparently. Stay away from the large creatures, namely buffalo. They're pretty badass, and they don't care. They're not cows. They're not dogs. They've been hunted by wolves pretty recently, as a matter of fact. So they're ready to kind of, you think your 50-pound overweight selfie idea is going to be able to sustain a buffalo attack? Come on. It's not going to happen. Have you ever gone to the buffaloes? Have you ever seen the buffaloes out in the West?
I have not, no, but I'm guessing I won't be getting one as a pet anytime soon.
Well, you don't want one as a pet. They're a large creature. Okay. In case you don't get it, the Native Americans, who were the original badasses, these guys were able to hunt, fish, gather, appreciated the land. They knew to wait. Don't go near those. They're, you know, unless you've got weapons, because they're pretty badass. You know, they're going to, you know, they can do some damage. And every year, it seems like Native Americans are the ones that, hey, white people, don't go do cocaine. A bison severely injured a Minnesota woman on Saturday at Theodore Roosevelt National Park. The National Park Service said in a statement on Tuesday, you know you're in Theodore Roosevelt when the buffaloes go bully. No. Sorry. Why is that buffalo got a big stick? it's coming to kick your butt because you got too close for the selfie. Park officials reported she was in serious but stable condition after suffering significant injuries to her abdomen and foot from the buffalo, who are not messing around. The woman was taken to Fargo Hospital after being transported by ambulance to a hospital in Dickinson, about 30 miles east of Painted Canyon, a colorful Badlands vista popular with motorists, when she was injured on the trailhead. The attack is under investigation. Exact details are unknown. Park Superintendent Angie Richmond did not immediately respond to questions. On Monday, a bison charged and gored a 47-year-old Phoenix woman in Yellowstone. She sustained significant injuries to her chest and abdomen, was taken by helicopter to Idaho Falls Hospital. Park officials reminded visitors that bison are large, powerful, and wild. Like I said, do we really need to do this public service announcement? You would think that you would say, hey, look, that's a large, powerful, and wild animal over there.
Yeah, I'm going to go kiss it.
Really? Apparently so.
I heard they bring the ball back when you play fetch.
Oh, do they? Oh, here you go. Come here, little. Come here, fella. Come here, bully. Come here. They can turn quickly, easily outrun people. Yeah, your spin class ain't going to help you here. I'm going to give you a heads up here. Bulls can be aggressive during mating season, which runs from mid-July through August. Park regulations require visitors to stay at least 25 yards away from large animals. Heck, I can say this. It's kind of rutting season around the lakes in Minneapolis right now. I wouldn't advise getting around some of the guys over there. I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, and that's not a buffalo. That dude's just covered with too much cologne, okay? That's the biggest problem you got there. Whoa, you know, you just know. But I'm smart enough to stay away from that guy, let alone if there was a few thousand pound large buffalo right there. I'm not over there saying, it's so soft. You're about to discover the non-soft parts of the buffalo, and they're very good at showing them. I mean, buffalo, they live on the plains with no camouflage. I mean, it's just grasslands. And wolves and coyotes go for them all the time. And they're like, all right, whatever. Let me throw you a few hundred feet. You think, you know, Pam from, you know, Talladega is going to be able to go up there and I'm going to go and give it a hug. It's a cute little thing. It's a buffalo. So, Pantheon, can you think of any other ones that we've had to do public service announcements, which you really don't believe we actually have to do these, but apparently we do?
I think bears have to be up there, too.
Well, my God, you'd think, you know, it's not a friendly animal. It's a bear.
And like buffalo, though. They're generally going to be scared. Not saying you want to go up and hug a bear, but yeah.
It's not a cow. It's not.
That's what great people are probably. Oh, it's just like a cow or a horse.
Okay, so I was at Oliver Kelly Farm. You know, have you ever been to that one, the historic farm up in the north by Elk River there?
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think I have, no.
It's a good farm. And the one guy says to me, hey, I want you to do something for me, right? So what? So I got to fix this fence post. All right. And there's already a cow, like the distance of you to me, already eyeing me up. And he's like, I need you to keep the cow back in the paddock.
How?
Well, just make noise. Really? Like, you know, show tunes? What? You know, it's like, I gotta believe. No, I mean.
And wave around this red thing, too.
What he did is I want you to put your arms straight out and go, ha! Which is my usual Friday night in Minneapolis. Never mind. Anyway, I'm supposed to put my arms out and seriously, ha! So, and this cow is looking at me like, oh, this is just, I'm going to go over and get the sweet grasses in the other field because Johnny Tourist here, he ain't going to stop me. And I did it, and the cow kind of looked at me and was like, okay, fine, you got me.
Oh, you did do it, okay.
Yes, I had to. The cow was testing me, man. He was coming up in my business. I was getting ready to throw hands. I don't even know what that means. I don't. I'm around the young kids, you know.
They show weakness around a cow.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, I'm like, where's the ice cream on this thing? You know, that was a cow. Cows have been domesticated. A dog scares a cow. A golden retriever scares a cow. You're going to think you're going out to a buffalo? Oh, God. It's, you know, it's like I said, you wouldn't think you would have to even do this public service announcement. Leave the large wild animals alone. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I got to talk about a hilarious tweet from Twitter today that I just thought was hilarious. I really did. I just think that it's in that vein of just, you've got to be kidding me that this is where you guys are at. Because if you don't know, Twitter is in trouble. Twitter's in big trouble. The idea that Elon Musk had that he was just going to be able to, you know, welcome all the trolls back and if everyone was going to be happy again is blown up in his face because most major corporations don't want people who are either accusing everyone of being Hitler or praising Hitler to be where their ads for a Big Mac are. I mean, it just, you know, they don't necessarily think, yeah, let's advertise here. I mean, it's one of those things where they lost most of their major revenue. And Elon Musk has been, if I can be blunt, dumb enough to even talk about this on Twitter. Yeah, we're down dramatically on our sales. Yeah, okay, that's good. And I'm, as much as I have been shocked at how many stupid conservatives, and I mean you guys are brick freaking dumb, to pay a billionaire for a blue check verification, a validation of your own existence, you're paying a billionaire. And don't get me wrong, I can understand some people doing this. When he first opened it up, remember when he first opened it up and all the people were setting up fake corporations with blue check marks? And putting out really kind of horrible statements about their own product. That was, yeah. They've cleaned that up a little bit, and they have now a verification process again, which apparently he didn't think was necessarily a good idea. I can get that some people want to have that. For me, I just look at that. That is, especially when I pull up your account and you got 150, 200 followers, you know, you're just, I can just see you. Do you wear like a blue check mark pin on your shirt walking around saying, I'm stupid enough to give a billionaire my money for him to validate me? Ha! Is that what you're doing? Because that's just dumb. It doesn't help as well. And this is a story. I was trying to get to this yesterday. I didn't really have the time. An investor in Elon Musk's Twitter has written down their stake of the business by 47%. He bought it for $44 billion. They're now listing it as $23 billion. And I should make sure we understand this. This investor is actually someone who's close friends or close business acquaintances with Elon Musk. This isn't just some neutral media outlet. This is someone who's invested in his company, so doesn't really want to, you know, spill the whole beans, but is someone who is supposedly an ally of Elon Musk, and even they are saying his company's worth today is $23 billion versus $44 billion. And I got to stop here. I've racked my brain to try to figure out a faster devaluation of this magnitude. I've never even heard of it. I've never even heard of this. He bought it in October. It's July. It's 9 months later. And we're not talking he bought it for $3 or $4 million and it's worth, you know, $1 million because he's got some issues there. He bought it for $44 billion and today its worth is $23 billion, according to someone who supports him and likes him and is invested in him. $23 billion. That's it. That's it. That's it. It's crazy. I can't think of any other corporation that has lost as much value in as short a period of time as Twitter has because of Elon Musk and because he is so bad at running it. Because once again, when Threads opened up, and by the way, Threads, Zuckerberg is not, you know, necessarily a good guy himself, and he's kind of weird. Not kind of, he's weird. But dude knows business, and he went for the freaking jugular. The second they went out there, or was it within a week? Oh, they went out there and said, we're going to put limits on how many tweets you can see in a day. He said, open up Threads, which was already attached to the much larger social media platform of Instagram. And I can tell you right now, there are people I know that I followed on Twitter all the time and interacted with all the time, who are now pretty much exclusively on Threads. I have not seen them on Twitter since then. Threads is going to stick. And it already is. They already had 100 million signups. And they hadn't even gotten to Europe yet. So, yeah. He has mismanaged this to a T. And when Threads came on out, he said something so insanely stupid that it makes me wonder if he actually has the function to use a spoon, let alone run things like Tesla and SpaceX and Twitter. He said, wouldn't you rather have people insult you to your face as opposed to live in some place where people you don't know who is and who is not against you? And I said to myself, he actually thinks we all wake up every day and just want a bunch of freaking trolls to constantly insult you and threaten you and say you're going to kill your kids and stuff like that. He thinks that's what we want. Dear Lord, 23 billion. How about 3 billion? How in the world are you even thinking your product is worth anything if this is what you think? I could walk down the street and have a pleasant conversation with someone, or I could walk down the street and have someone kick me right in the crotch. I'll take the crotch kicking. No one is saying that. No one is saying that. And yet that's what he was saying when Threads came out. He came out with the Twitter guys came out with a statement, which tells me they've realized, I think, this whole, we're here to insult you like it's the Don Rickles roast. We're here to insult you to your face is not the best plan. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I'll talk about that tweet. Might get time for Dynamo Dave as well. And got Stein coming up here at 3:30. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Okay, so largest corporate losses of all time. Well, maybe because I mean that could, because I mean if you look at this list, there's a lot of them. 2009, so Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, their collapse there, but that was part of a larger industry-wide collapse. AOL, Time Warner had their media collapse that happened. That's different. So let's go to the quarterly loss. Because this would be in three quarters, he has lost this much money. Once again, it's a lot of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. I mean, you got Time Warner in 2008, but that was once again the full recession there. General Motors, when was that one? 2007. Well, that was kind of once again part of that. That was the beginning part of that, the economic bubble blasting there. AOL, Time Warner is now owned by AT&T. And that was the post 9/11 recession, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it?
So yeah, once I think again, that was right around the turn of the century. Yeah.
None of these things are self-induced. And you and I talked about Tylenol back in the 80s when they had the Tylenol scare. People were poisoning Tylenol. Tylenol themselves pulled their product off the shelves and took a massive loss because they realized they had one chance to rebuild brand loyalty, and so they put safety precautions and stuff like this, and they were successful with that. But that's not just bad corporate decisions. And by the way, if you want to look at annual losses, largest corporate annual losses of all time, you can factor in these major recessions. Twitter right now, if we're going off of his friend's loss, it would be $21 billion loss. It would already be the 15th worst loss of all time. And we are only three quarters of the way through the year. And that's with a friendly voice. Twitter is a mess. So here is the tweet. This came from Twitter Safety. More than 99% of content users and advertisers see on Twitter is healthy. And the reach of the hate speech on Twitter continues to represent an extremely small fraction of the overall conversation. Blah, 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 go into their sprinkler thing there. Today we're sharing update that includes April, May. They're basically saying that, oh, well, we've gotten rid of hate speech and this healthy interactions. Now, I pointed out this morning, I am on Facebook. I am on Blue Sky. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on Threads. Those four. My combined following on all four of those and I can throw Instagram in there. That's like 400 followers there. I don't do that much on Instagram. But if I throw Instagram in there, I'm looking at about 9,200 followers on all of those. That'd be Facebook, Blue Sky, Mastodon, Threads, and Facebook. All right, and Instagram. 9,200. On Twitter, I have 3,700 followers. I have more negative people coming to my page and giving out pretty damn unhealthy comments, threats, insults, more in a day on Twitter than I get on the other five combined in a month. So this whole idea, I remember distinctly in October when Elon let all these the trolls back in and it instantaneously became a much more ugly situation. We had a nice little stretch there for a few weeks after January 6th until Elon took over. It wasn't the best. There were still some jerks, but it wasn't bad. But this whole idea of we've got tons of healthy interaction, bull crud, man. I am there every freaking day. Twitter is a freaking cesspool. And trust me, I get it. You don't want to, I got 3,700 followers there. That's really nice. And that's not easy to replace, but I got far more on Facebook. And trust me, there's probably going to be a day not that far down the line where I just say it's not worth it. It's just not worth being there anymore. And I'm not the only one. Threads is going to do some damage to Twitter. And that's why he's already threatening lawsuits. So anyway, I wanted to say this because all of the ludicrous statements I've ever heard, that's one of the most ludicrous. Dynamo Dave, I'll get you in here really quick before we go to the break. We got about a minute. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. Yesterday, I think you were talking about global warming, and here's an unfun fact. According to GreenMatters.com, within 2 years now, the Florida Keys, that U.S. Highway 1, many of those bridges could be underwater. And I don't think there's any sort of program to fix that underway right now. And it's pretty costly to take ferries between islands.
Well, and that's key, you're talking about Key West on the very southern side, right?
Yes. So the whole Florida Keys, that it's, nicknamed the Highway to the Sea. It'll be called the Highway Under the Sea.
Well, and you know what? They and Dave, thank you very much. These are the people that are going to be sitting there screaming the day it goes underwater. It's like, we need help. We need help. And 24 hours earlier, it's like, look at you loon ball liberals with your climate change. Where's your problem now? There's not much you can do. And the reality is I think that at this point, considering how much we've talked about climate change, and I can tell you this, little things. Everyone can do a little thing. I got a hybrid car right now. Tomorrow I'm going to fill it up with gas. It'll be the first time in 18 days I put gas in my car. 18, and it's not like I'm not driving it. They're fantastic. You can do little things like that. Solar power panels on your house. You can just recycle effectively. Turn off, not use power as much as you can. Little things that you can do. And the reality is that there's too many people out there that they just buy into this. You don't have to do a damn thing. It's just made up. And those are the people who are always belly aching and crying most when their house is swept out to sea or the road to their house is underwater. Why isn't anybody helping me? Well, because you were a jackass for 30 years and now all of a sudden you're acting like the victim. So now, it doesn't make me want to roll out the red carpet for you. How about I say it like that? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come back. Stein. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Cover up. Jeff.
Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert and noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books as well as totallyiowa.com, the Iowa Business Report, and the Iowa Politics Report. Come to us via the KEXEL Cedar Falls Waterloo, where Jeff is located today. Hey, Jeff.
Are you happier with the twins?
Well, I'm happier that they benched Buxton. Do they? Hey, Brett, do we know, is Buxton back in the lineup again tonight or no?
Oh, let's see.
All right, see if that is.
Great DH that can barely hit the ball.
Yeah, he's bitten, 198, for goodness sake.
Here's all I know, boys and girls. I'm minding my own business. I watch the Twitter machine, and Matt McNeil says people should lose their jobs.
Yes.
That's all I know. And so I felt compelled to ask.
They keep playing certain players in the four or the three slot hitting 190. That's not a smart play. I don't know if they've released the lineup yet, have they, for tonight?
Not that I'm seeing yet, you know, no.
Waller would be.
It's confidential. Yeah. It's secret. We're not going to let you know because there's probably a secret weapon that's going to come up that you're not supposed to know about yet. And then it'll be happy days are here again, right?
Dude, man, a decent manager could have this team about 15 games higher in the standings. And it really
what
is.
What would you do? I don't want to go back to the old days when you did sports, but what would you do right now? Put on a jersey and take the field. What are you doing?
I wouldn't have been dumb enough. First of all, I wouldn't have been dumb enough to go and trade the American League reigning batting championship when I got Mr. Glass over there in the corner who breaks an arm every time he picks up a piece of paper and say, you know what? They were willing to take Buxton or a rise. I'm going to give him a rise. They did with Miami. They can't get out of their own way. The problem with the Twins, you want to know what the problem?
How do you fix it? What do you do tonight?
Stop managing the team based on the revenue from jersey sales, because that's the problem. Is that the front office is controlling the management of that team? I think to where they fact that they sell a lot of Byron Buxton jerseys, so Byron Buxton has to be in the lineup even when he clearly should not be in the lineup, and that is the problem. You cannot, if you want to sell jerseys, go sell jerseys. You want to have a baseball team, have a baseball team, but don't try to manage the baseball team by saying, who's our number one seller today?
By the way, I want to thank Brett for putting our names up on the screen as he began that rant so no one would be confused. What jersey number would you wear? Is it 995 for 950?
Oh, 950? Well, no, I'd be number one, maybe.
I think Billy Martin wore number one for the Twins in the past. Just thought I'd roll that out there.
Have we retired Billy Martin's number? I don't think we retired Billy Martin's number. I don't think we have. So I think it's still viable. I might
I don't
have
think
enough.
You'd wear 45.
I'm not going to go get Kirby's number. So it's like take it down off the wall. Put it on me.
Matt used to wear 23, but in the comeback, he's wearing 45.
Yeah, there you go. Nicely
very
done.
Very well played.
Mm-hmm. Okay, letter that former President Trump received from Special Counsel Jack Smith informing that he's a target of a federal investigation into efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election mentions three federal statutes related to the deprivation of rights, conspiracy to defraud the U.S., and tampering with a witness. Trump's in trouble with this. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people, I've seen quite a bit of an analyst talking about the fact that they're saying, really, this is why Trump is so determined to win the presidency, is the only way he's going to get out of this right now is if he wins the election next year.
I went Jordan with the 45. Brett went Trump with the 45. So nice reference. Just to make sure we honed in on that. Of course, it's the best chance for him because he cannot trust any of the others to pardon him. All right, so let's play this out then. Obviously, no one with a D by their name is going to pardon Trump, mm-hmm. right? Okay. No amount of healing the nation, that's not going to happen. You have a whole host of Republicans who say, if I'm president, I'll pardon Trump. Starts with DeSantis, goes through Ramaswamy, et cetera, et cetera. And there are others who are like, no, let him rot. That's the Will Hurd, Asa Hutchinson, yeah. Chris Christie wing of the party, but potentially growing. But in any event, if I'm Donald Trump, do I trust Ron DeSantis to pardon me? Because all Trump will do in a DeSantis presidency, obtained by whatever means, is undermine him. Right. If anybody listens to what he has to say, that is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, truly, the only way he can get out of this is to pardon himself. But we may not be able to pardon ourselves, especially if it's a state charge like in New York or forthcoming in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. So which we're not talking. That's not the letter from Jack Smith either. So I mean, this once again, just
no, absolutely. But we've talked before where it's like, okay, the president can pardon people, not if it's a state charge. And so now you've just got this domino effect of things. But what I find fascinating about it, and this is the thing to watch, if Trump is indicted by the January 6th grand jury, he won't be indicted alone. Because one of the hallmarks of this is conspiracy, correct?
Yep.
And if in order to have a conspiracy, you have to have two people. So look what they did with the documents case in Florida. They indicted Trump and one of his employees who may have physically moved boxes. Now, what's that employee's defense? The boss told me to move a box. I didn't know what it was. You indict. I mean, this is smart prosecution, right? For example, when you, Matt, get hauled before the grand jury.
Of course.
All right.
Eventually.
They might indict Brett as well, because even though he has nothing really to do with it, he'll roll on you in a heartbeat. To save himself.
Say that again, yes.
He's the ringleader. What are you talking about? I have no idea where those pandas came from. I really have no idea.
I could have gone the other direction, but Brett controls the microphone. So I went with, he's the innocent party and you're the rogue. So what did they do in the documents case? They indict this poor guy whose only crime is he's an employee of Trump. So what are they going to do? They're going to try to squeeze him so that he'll roll on Trump to save his own neck. That's what you do in these cases. Okay, so let's say you've got a federal indictment, January 6th grand jury. It's not just going to be Trump. And the question is, who is indicted with him and how many? And that's going to be key, because how many of these people, when push really comes to shove, are going to sing like canaries to save their own skin.
Well, and it should be pointed out that one of the problems that his employee was having was he was saying, I'm trying to find my own lawyer here. And the Trump team was trying to set him up with a Trump team controlled lawyer. And he was like, no, I don't want that. I want to try. And I think he's got a guy out of Florida now, if I remember the news story correctly. But
yeah, because you have to have somebody who's licensed in Florida.
Yeah.
That was part of the problem, too, because they were people were volunteering. Well, OK, A, do you trust that? And second, are they even licensed to practice in the jurisdiction?
Yeah.
But what names could you hear along as indicted co-conspirators?
Roger Stone, Giuliani, Bannon, Stephen Miller. I wouldn't put him past him being involved here. Let's be honest. I mean, you know, considering what we learned about the Trump charity that he was running, would anyone be surprised if Junior, Eric, and Ivanka's name possibly come up? I wouldn't.
Well, but again, with regard to January 6th, I'm not so sure. Yeah. Because that's a whole different issue.
Well, but we're also not just talking about January 6th. It's that whole running from the day of the election when Rudy starts running through the White House saying, deny it, deny it, deny it. Yeah. And he's running through the White House on that. I think that's the case. By the way, can we step back here 1 second here? Because it's historically, I sometimes like to talk about this. Isn't this really, when you talk about who would pardon him, isn't this the legacy of Ford? Is that no one remembers Gerald Ford for any other reason outside of he pardoned Nixon. And if I am a president and if I'm the Republican or even the Democrat or anything like this, and I'm saying to him, you know, people are like, you should go probably pardon him. Do you want to do that? Because all you could do anything else, but the number one thing that you will always be remembered for is you pardoned and to pardon someone, you have to have someone who's guilty of something. You know, you pardoned a guilty Trump. You know, for whatever the reason is. And I just don't think when you look at people and you get to that point in legacy building, I don't think they want to be Ford 2.0.
Okay, a couple of distinctions. I generally agree with you, but a couple of distinctions. Ford pardoned Nixon before any charges were filed of any kind. And the gist of it was to say, we have to get past this. And so he's left office. I'm going to pardon him for anything he might have done. There, We're done. Let's move forward. That was in 1974. It's going to be 50 years by the time the next president takes the oath. 49 and a half, okay? It's a very different political climate, number one. But number two, you have active charges against Trump. And presuming this federal indictment comes in with January 6th, this will be the third indictment, two of them federal. There is a big difference between pardoning someone who has not been charged 50 years ago. And I'm not saying that was ultimately right. He didn't win election in his own right because of it. There's no doubt. No doubt. We got Jimmy Carter because of the pardon. Okay. Any Democrat because of the pardon. The next president in 2025, if that person is a Democrat or is a Republican, you're going to have a former president who has been charged multiple times in different jurisdictions, who might be convicted of something. That's a very different pardon situation, isn't it?
Well, and you're not going to be.
The Ford rationale was to not put the country through all this. Well, we're through it. Okay.
Well, and you're not going to be able to say, because you, like I said, if you're bringing charges, even if you haven't gotten convictions, you're bringing charges, you're going to go to trial, they pardon him. And all of a sudden, the evidence against him is going to come on out. And all of a sudden, if there is like undeniable, he is guilty, he should have been charged, he should have gone to jail, that president has to be answer the question. It's like, well, didn't you know this case? And you're not going to be able to say, oh, I didn't really research to see if there was anything bad that had happened. You're going to, no, that's going to get a blow up in your face really bad.
Well, and that's the whole thing where you get someone like DeSantis right now who's been saying, I will pardon anyone, including January 6th defendants, who were prosecuted for political reasons. Okay, it's a great stump statement, but he has no intention of keeping his word with that, because once he gets into the White House, assume he does, he's going to look and say, well, actually, this was for the sanctity of the Republic. This had nothing to do with political purposes. And that's how he'll weasel out of the promise to pardon Trump. He'll say, well, when I said that, I didn't know that he was going to be convicted by a jury of his peers. I didn't know all of this evidence. It's tough being him, but we don't have to worry about him being invited to any reunions anytime soon, because he'll be at the Gray Bar Hotel for life. So, you know, to that point, you're at a very different place here where there's even more downside for a president who pardons Trump, especially, again, you're DeSantis. Part of your whole appeal is to say, I can do this for 8 years. If I'm Trump light, at least I'll be there for 8 years. And if you torpedo your own presidency by cleansing a conviction of a former president, oof. That's tough.
A conviction for trying to overthrow an election. And, you know, that's the other thing, too. And now we're starting to look, you know, third world kangaroo court sort of stuff. And that's kind of nasty. By the way, not even the wildest headline I saw of Trump. Did you see the one? Apparently, Israel has formally filed a protest because they lent some ancient artifacts to the White House while Trump was in there. And Trump just took them with him down to Mar-a-Lago. Ancient Israeli artifacts, which are priceless artifacts, which they were kind, very kind to them to bring them over, have them on display, part of this. And Trump, before, hey, grab all those are with me. You know, I only hope that the ancient Israeli artifacts were not stored in the same room as the boxes in the bathroom. Okay.
Well, let's see. We got files. We got some T-shirts. Then there's some tchotchkes over here. I don't know where that. I don't know. I had not heard that. Is that why the Israeli president was at the White House?
I think it was because he was coming over. They said, okay, why don't we have our antiquities guys come with us, because we're going to formally say we want this stuff back. And of course,
I thought he was showing up to say, I got a bag here. If you just want to fill it with the stuff.
Didn't Trump on a golf course have a plaque that he made up about like a Civil War family member that was just completely fraudulent or something of that nature?
I don't know.
Oh God!
I mean, here's why I'm dismissive of it. It's like, there's a level of where do we go from here that, from a political campaign standpoint, has to include Trump, right? He's the GOP front runner by far. Does that change? I don't know.
Well,
my feeling is you've got, you've got Trump running again, and it's going to be Biden running again if the current paths play out, right? So what leads anyone on any side to think the result is different in 2024? And I say that for this reason. If you're the Republicans who believe that the election was stolen in 2020, what steps have been taken to make sure it isn't stolen again in 2024? Answer, nothing. Nothing has been done to change election law. Nothing has been done in any respect. So why do you think there would be a different result?
By the way, you see
what I'm saying?
It's no fraudulent, though. I mean, Joe Biden won fair and square. And
I
understand what you're saying from their point of view. But the reality is I think he's going to lose even worse unless,
that's the other half of it, right? I mean, if you're a Trump supporter and you think you was robbed in 2020, you've done nothing to suggest a different outcome in 2024. And if, in fact, everything is fair and square in 2020, what's to say you're going to have any different outcome in 2024? And there's nothing to suggest a change.
And we just saw in 2022 a very upsetting thing for a lot of Republicans is that, societal issues will override economic issues for a family. If you start taking away people, if the perception is you're taking away people's rights, and that's not a very easy sell, saying, "Hey, we're still good for the economy." Yeah, but for you to be good at the economy, I have to lose my rights. No, that's not going to play, and that's another problem for the Republicans.
And to your point briefly before you break, we have to remember this is not a national election; it is a state by state election. And so I don't care what a national poll says about abortion, gun control, Republican versus Democrat. I care what individual state polls read because that's how we vote. And so to your point, why did Republicans not do as well in 2022? Because they were looking at a national issue, quote unquote, and they were missing the state by state, district by district races. That's why it didn't pan out.
And they're still not getting out of their own way. Michigan, we've got to talk about this because it's the Al Capone thing. It's not heavy duty charges, but they're going to stick. Jeff Stein joining us right now, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us right now. Michigan is where we're seeing this other bit of legal news. 16 Republicans have been charged with 8 counts each for basically being the fake electors in Michigan and trying to pass themselves off. Forgery is the main thing. This would be like me trying to write a check for Jeff Stein and trying to cash it somewhere. You can't do that. You can't represent yourself as someone else illegally, and that's part of it. Here's the other part, which I thought was fascinating. It's state law in Michigan that the electors have to be elected in the state capitol. This didn't happen in the state capitol. This happened in the basement of the Republican Party headquarters, and it's illegal for them to pass themselves off as electors that were not elected in the state capitol. That's one of the charges, and as one person said, that's just cut and dry. These guys are going to get convicted on that one easy just because you're supposed to know where you're supposed to be when this happens.
I have heard some on the national level, and this is the danger between national versus local, say, well, it's not like the people in Congress were confused as to who the electors were, and so therefore it's not fraudulent because it was not believable. Okay? Fine, play that one out, except to your point. Here's the state law. Here's how we certify our electors in this state.
Yep.
And if you do, so this is why I don't like the histrionics about national this and national that. It's nothing is national. You have different rules in different states for electors. And if you sit in a party headquarters basement and sign a document, then you either are ignorant of the law, and ignorance is no excuse on a law like this, because your intention was to pass yourself off as an elector.
Overturn your state's election. Yes.
People are just, they were very quick to say, what can we do without checking out any of the rules?
Yeah, it's not a bookkeeping error.
Rules get in the way.
Yeah, it's not a bookkeeping error. And this is Capone on mail fraud. You know, it's not pretty. It's not Zazzy, But you're going to have a lot of years in jail because of this, because it's really cut and dry. I mean, they're fraudulent. It's forgery. They're in trouble for this, and they're already, you know, some questions on whether or not this is about something. There was Christine Bob, Trump's attorney, said this was about trying to get the fake electors to flip on Trump and testify against him, which was a mistake because so far Jack Smith has not even talked about the fake electors. And so this is almost an admission by Bob that Trump knew that the fake electors were there. And so, yeah, this is a mistake there. It's a mess. But as you said, it's federal people trying to dictate state law, and they don't know these laws. They didn't know them back when they tried to overturn the election, and they still don't know them today.
Well, and this is the problem, again, with thinking of this as a national election. It is an election by states for a national audience or a national office. And until people figure that out, that you're going to have different poll times, that you're going to have different rules, you're going to have all of these things, you're just going to have this mess. And as quickly as I saw someone say, the only people who have suffered as a result of any of this are the ones who are actually doing things like signing documents and going to the Capitol. The January 6th grand jury could change that dynamic.
Trump doesn't even know he can record a phone call, for God's sake. So it's got some issues there.
It was a perfect phone call, Matt.
Was.
You leave that alone.
Listen to Stein this week in Hour 2. That's coming up next. Hour number 2 of the show here on your Wednesday, Matt and Brett. 952-946-6205. Do want to remind you, we do re-air the Jeff Stein interviews on the weekends, so you can listen to that. Its own little show on the weekends right here on AM 950. And if you're not listening to the lineup we've got now, I have been with this station now 13 years. And even going back to the original lineup, say, they had here, when Franken was on the air and Rachel Maddow was on the air and Ed Schultz, I'm sorry, I think what we've got right now on this station is just pure freaking gold. We're starting with Santita in the morning, Steph, Hartman, this crap fest. Native Roots Radio, fantastic show. The evenings now, and I don't get to talk about this enough, but got Rick Smith at 8. You got Ghost Box Radio at 10, which is phenomenal. A lot of people loving that right now. And then Patty Vasquez out of Chicago, joining us at 11 o'clock. We are morning to night. We're set for you. You're gold here. I love this lineup we've got right now.
Absolutely. I'm totally with you on that. We got some great programming in the evening. No repeats or anything. It's all new content.
Yep. It's all good stuff. Great, yeah. And it's just talked about. By the way, I need to get Patty on the air again. I need to get Rick on the air again. I haven't had those guys on in a while. I need Patty on the air because
Rick's got some thoughts on what's going on in Hollywood.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. It'd be interesting there. I mean, the whole concept of when we talked to Bill Corbett the other day, it's like the whole concept of, yeah, they want your likeness for eternity. Jeez. That's good. And by the way, The Last of Us, or not this, there was a show on, one of the actresses from one of the shows, it was a show from a few years ago. Anyway, she was talking about her residuals. She said, my monthly residuals from that show were about 12 cents. So when people sit there, it's like, I'm making all this money. No, you're not. You know, these guys, it's becoming clear, they're very vocally and very publicly displaying how much money they're not making. So I want to give a heads up, weather heads up. We do have some storms. Look at this. The AccuWeather window here. Not really here, not in the metro. But there are some storms that are starting to fire up to the west of us. They are going to be expected in the metro between 5 and 9 tonight. So just keep that in mind. We could have some rain showers in the Twin Cities, some heavier storms. There is a chance of some severe weather. So just keep that in mind and make sure you're careful out there wherever you're going to be heading out there. We haven't had that much of that. Haven't had that much of it. So yesterday, you guys, you and Cooligan were yapping away about something. Actually, you were talking about this Republican.
Something earlier. Yeah.
You're talking about this Republican speaker that's coming into the central part of the state.
Oh, he's the Republican Fabio.
Man. Yeah, the Fabio. And this is at Sauk Rapids County Country Roadhouse, Raleigh's Rednecks and Longnecks. A place that displays a large amount of Confederate memorabilia. I'm going to read from the Reformer story because I went and pulled this one out here. The bar, which itself is one of the top honky-tonks in the nation, was briefly deleted from the state's tourism website after some residents objected to the bar's glorification of the Confederacy. This is a report from 2020. Minnesota was the first state to volunteer troops to the Civil War effort. The 1st Minnesota Infantry Regiment played a crucial role in an all-important victory over the pro-slavery regime in Gettysburg. This is from Calvin Coolidge. And there's a lot of presidents that chimed in, a lot of military leaders that chimed in over the 50 to 75 years after Gettysburg that said those eight companies of the 1st Minnesota are entitled to rank as the saviors of our country. Said while dedicating a memorial to William Colville down in Cannon Falls in 1929. The bar is owned by Roland Hogreff, H-O-G-R-E-F-E, Hogreff. I loved when he picked up Harry Potter to take him to Hogwarts. Hogreff. You're a racist, Harry. God. The Confederate version of Harry Potter would just suck.
My ideas on a QAnon version of Harry Potter, too.
Hagrid, or Hogreff, was convicted in 2011. You get ready, folks. Yeah, it's going to go exactly where you think this is going to go. If you'd heard the show yesterday, these guys were talking about it. In 2011, he was convicted of striking a black man with his Ford Bronco in St. Cloud after he swerved at and exchanged insults, including racial epithets, with a group of black men walking along a road. He ran into a man who had come out of the apartment to see what the ruckus was about. A juvenile related to the victim fired 3 shots at Hogreff's Bronco as it left the scene. He pled guilty to leaving the scene of an injury accident and was sentenced to 366 days in prison with all but 90 days suspended. So he went to jail for 90 days. All right. It does put this in perspective that my daughter, about a week ago, I went downstairs and she was just starting to watch the exceptional documentary from Ken Burns on the Civil War, where it talks about everything there. And I was trying to tell her, I said, you got to remember, before Ken Burns broke this down, there was way too much of this that tried to portray the South as righteous. No, they weren't. No. The soldiers themselves were dupes. They were tricked by the wealthy, rich, white slave owners to basically hand over their lives so that they could basically keep black people as slaves so that they could make the most amount of money from their crops. That's what was going on. And it was about slavery. They were talking about, the capture of Pillow Island on the Mississippi River. This is just on the southern side of Missouri. This was kind of one of the last forts that fell before they got down to Vicksburg. And the southern troops took back the fort and immediately, they took prisoners of war of the white soldiers, but specifically because they said, and this was, I believe, Nathan Bedford Forrest, he was the guy that founded the KKK, said they're inferior, shoot them, as regarding the black soldiers. So, yeah, it was about slavery. It was about slavery. Read any of the speeches from the Confederate vice president. It was about slavery. And Ken Burns' documentary does a very good job, if you watch it, of basically painting it as, this is about slavery. This is about slavery and stopping the slavery. And we're at the point now, I think it's the third episode, which is in the end of 1862, where we're basically, with the Emancipation Proclamation, it not only frees the slaves, but as well it kept England and France out of the conflict because basically they would have to take the side of pro-slavery. Emphatically take the side of pro-slavery in that conflict, and they didn't want to do that. So a little bit later on, we will be get a view of 1863 and what is the ultimate moment in the conflict where things basically go from looking like the South might be able to pull off the upset to basically what was then the slow death march of the Southern Confederate military because they lost. And that was Gettysburg. If you've never been to Gettysburg, I have been to Gettysburg. I'm going to have this conversation because it blows my freaking mind that anybody in this state would proudly fly the freaking Confederate flag. Not because I like Dukes of Hazzard. Shut up. No, you're flying it because you support that backwoods racist mentality of the South. The enemy of Minnesota. You can't fly the Confederate flag and say you are either A, a proud Minnesotan, or B, you support the troops, because neither of those are true if you fly the Confederate flag. And the last time I talked about this was it the fire department that was down in southern Minnesota on their 4th of July parade was flying, the fire department flew the Confederate flag as part of the fire. And I'm like, fire every damn one of those morons. Every one of them. You don't get it, man. No, I get it. I get it completely. It's you trying to hide your racism in plain sight. That's all it is. Because if you actually know the history of the Minnesota 1st Volunteer Regiment, you would never fly the Confederate flag if you were a proud Minnesotan. And anyone that flies that flag, you suck at being Minnesotan. You're a horrible person that hates this state, and that's just that. Let's run through it, shall we? Yes, we shall. This follows a story that was in, and I'm going to go through this. This is the MinPo story. There was a question about this that showed up in an earlier thing. So I've been meaning to talk about this, and I meant to try to do it closer to the 4th of July because Gettysburg in 1863 happened over the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of July. So I usually like to talk about this a little bit when it comes up, but now I guess I have to because we got some dumb idiot up in Sauk Rapids flying the freaking Confederate flag saying, I'm a proud Minnesotan. Shut up. Someone asked, hey, is it true that Minnesota has a flag from the South? Yes, it is. The 28th Virginia battle flag was captured by the Minnesota 1st Volunteer Regiment at the Battles of Gettysburg in 1863 when a 1905 congressional resolution was passed requiring captured flags to be returned to the governors of formerly seceded states. The border states who supplied regiments to the Confederate Army, the scarred square red flag with the blue saltire, which the white stars are not returned to the governor of Virginia. Nope. For more than 100 years, Virginia has been asking that Minnesota return it. According to the St. Paul Pioneer Press report, various groups have requested for its return in 1861, 2000, 2003, 2013, and 1998. Virginia Civil War reenactors threatened legal action over the flag every time Minnesota has refused. When in 2000, Virginia legislators asked once again to be returned, Jesse Ventura said, absolutely not. Why? I mean, we won. And there you go. Nicely done, Jesse. So, yeah, we have kept the Confederate flag of the Virginia troops. Now, by the way, I should mention this. What I'm about to describe to you happened on July 2nd. The flag we captured happened on July 3rd at Pickett's Charge. All right? And you need to understand the history of this for us to do that. All right, you have to understand the history of this and to make sure we understand exactly what happened. Because if you go to Gettysburg, the biggest memorial you will see at Gettysburg is Pennsylvania's, understandably. When the South invaded, basically all these Pennsylvania boys ran in from different parts of Pennsylvania to fight, and so there was a large supply there. The second largest memorial is for Minnesota because, as Calvin Coolidge mentioned, we saved the Union that day. July 2nd, 1863 is the day the 1st Minnesota is most remembered for. During the second day's fighting at Gettysburg, the regiment stopped the Confederates from splitting the Union line. So just a little background information. Gettysburg, it started actually on the north side of town as Confederates and and Union forces met on the roads into Gettysburg. And it quickly moved to the south side of town, where if you go to Gettysburg, you can see it laid out. On one side is Seminary Ridge, which is where there was a seminary there, and there's a ridge on the west side. That's where the Confederates were. About a mile away from them on the east side is Cemetery Ridge, right? Close, but two different things. Cemetery Ridge, which runs from the town cemetery at Gettysburg, and there's Culp's Hill is up behind it on the east side, and it runs all the way down to Big Round Top and Little Round Top on the southern side, which were the southern extent of the fighting. So that was the first day to the second day of the troops set up, and then it's pure freaking chaos. The Devil's Den, the Peach Orchard, the wheat field, just slaughter after slaughter. The race to hold the line on Little Round Top with the main boys that Chamberlain was the commanding officer there. Basically, they ran out of things, so they fixed bayonets and ran down the hill and took care of business. Nicely done. A brave moment and a very good memorial. If you get the chance to go do that, go see the memorial for the main guys, because that was as brave as, well, almost as brave as what Minnesota did. There comes a point, though, where through all this battle and all this carnage, there is a Massachusetts artillery group. And by the way, the thing which was so crazy is a year earlier, I was in Faneuil Hall in Boston. And if you go up to the third floor, there's a huge photograph of this unit from Massachusetts that survived Gettysburg, who basically, due to moving of troops and people making a mistake, they were out there kind of by themselves, firing off rounds and running as fast as they could with these cannons behind them as the Confederates came over the hill. That's where we begin our little story about what the First Minnesota did that day. Major General Winfield Hancock, commander of the Second Corps, could see the two brigades of Southerners commanded by Brigadier General Cadmus Wilcox breaching the line in front of one of the batteries. So here's the Massachusetts guys coming running back with their artillery guns. There's trouble. This is the line. If they break the line, it's over. The Union loses, Civil War over, it's done. It is quite literally that's where we're at right now. He quickly rode up to the troops guarding the battery and asked Colonel William Colville, "Which unit is this?" Colville responded, "It's the 1st Minnesota." General Hancock responded, "Attack that line." This is thousands of Confederates coming towards fewer than 300 Minnesotans. Yeah, they're slightly outnumbered. Slightly. They didn't even think about it. With their bayonets leveled, the Minnesotans broke the line. The first lines, the intensity of their charge disrupted the southern advance. With the unit nearly encircled, support arrived in time to allow them to make the fighting with fight in the Confederates' withdraw. The First Minnesota's selfless charge brought the Union the time needed for reinforcements to be brought up. During the charge, 215 of 262 Minnesotans were casualties within 5 minutes. Think about that. Of 262 Minnesotans who, without even thinking about it, ran into a far larger force of Confederates, 215 were casualties within 5 minutes. I can't even imagine what that chaos was like. The only other battle that seems to come close to it was Antietam, where on the north side of Antietam earlier in the day, it sounds like it was just that same kind of chaos. The unit commandant, Colonel William Colville, and all but three of his captains as well were part of the casualties. The First Minnesota flag lost 5 flag bearers, each man dropping his weapon to carry it. The 47 survivors rallied back to General Hancock under the command of their senior serving officer, at that point, Captain Nathan Mezick. The 82% casualty rate stands as the largest loss of life of any surviving U.S. military unit after a single day's engagement in the history of this country. The unit colors are displayed in the rotunda of the Minnesota Capitol for public appreciation. Damn right. Damn right they are. 82%. They didn't even blink. They went in there and they saved the Union. Calvin Coolidge, years later, 75 years later, is out there praising them as the eight batteries that saved the Union. I can't even comprehend what the bravery of these men to do this, and they saved the Union. They weren't sitting there saying, I like the Confederate flag. No, the Confederate flag is the flag that was flown by the people who killed and injured 215 of the 262 Minnesotans who charged into those lines. End of story. You fly that Confederate flag, you're a traitor to the state, and you sure as hell can't say you support the troops, because you sure don't. End of story on that. Minnesota has two monuments at the Gettysburg National Park. The more grand of the two bears the following inscription. On the afternoon of July 2nd, 1863, Sickles' Third Corps, having advanced from his line in the Emmitsburg Road, eight companies of the 1st Minnesota Regiment, numbering 262 men, were sent to this plate to support the battery upon Sickles' repulse. As his men were passing here in confused retreat, two Confederate brigades in pursuit were crossing the swale to gain time to bring up the reserves. General Hancock in person ordered the eight companies to charge the rapidly advancing enemy. The order was instantly repeated by Colonel William Colville, and the charge was instantly made down the slope at full speed through the concentrated fire of two brigades, breaking with bayonets of the enemies in front line as it was crossing a small brook in the low ground where the remnant of eight companies nearly surrounded by the enemy held its entire force at bay for a considerable time till it retired on the approach of the reserve. The charge successfully accomplished its object. It saved this position and probably the battlefield. The loss of the eight companies in the charge was 215 killed and wounded, more than 82%. 47 men were still in line, no man missing, in line, sacrificing desperate valor to the charge is no parallel in any war. Among the severely wounded were Colonel Colville, Lieutenant Colonel Chas P. Adams, Major Mark Downey. Among the killed, Captain Joseph Pierman, Captain Louis Mueller, Lieutenant Waldo Farrar. The next day, the regiment participated in repelling Pickett's charge, losing 17 more men who were killed and wounded, including of the three captains who were left after day two of Gettysburg. Two of them were casualties of the second day. We were down to one officer, and they still, and that's where we got that flag. As a matter of fact, if I can continue here, carrying on from the heavy losses from the previous day, the remaining men of the 1st Minnesota were reinforced by detached companies F and L. The reunited regiment was removed a bit north of the previous day's fight to one of the few places where Union lines were breached during Pickett's charge. They again had to charge to advance the Confederate troops with more losses. Captain Mezick was killed, Captain W.B. Farrell was mortally wounded, and Captain Henry C. Coates had to take command during the charge. Private Marshal Sherman of the Company C captured the colors of the 28th Virginia Infantry and received the Medal of Honor for his exploit. The Confederate flag was taken back to Minnesota, and you're not going to get it back. That one's ours. After being knocked out by a bullet in the head and later shot in the hand, Corporal Henry O'Brien repeatedly picked up the fallen colors of the 1st Minnesota and carried the wounded comrade back to the Union lines. He's also awarded the Medal of Freedom for his heroism. Reminder, so that when you see someone flying a Confederate flag like this, you know, jackass up at Sauk Rapids, you know, he's spitting on the legacy of these soldiers. He's spitting on them. He doesn't care because I ain't getting the good old boys. Good old boys! I'll tell you what. We'll take a break. We'll do a short segment when we come back. I'll take Alan's call here in just a moment. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Alan, hold on. I'll get to you in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. No, it's remarkable how many military leaders, have looked back on that moment, that one moment in the entire Civil War, and specifically called out that one unit. As a matter of fact, I would make an argument, and I'm thinking about this really quick. I'm just kind of running them. The Maine boys on Little Round Top and the 1st Minnesota are probably the two units that individually did something so extraordinary that are constantly mentioned and are the ones that for years afterwards were brought up when they wanted to take a solemn moment, they brought up the first Minnesota and saving the Union. Remarkable. Remarkable. And by the way, I should mention as well, a lot of Minnesota units were involved in Nashville. If you know, you want to read about another battle, and there's a memorial for Minnesota in Nashville too, because of it, this was basically the end of the Army of Tennessee, Army of the West. This was them trying desperately to pull Sherman out of Georgia, and so they're trying to take Nashville back. And a lot of Minnesotans, I think more Minnesotans died in Nashville overall than died in any other battle place in the country. And there's a memorial there in Nashville for Minnesota as well. Know your history. Alan in Lino Lakes, been holding for a while. Welcome on in. Thanks for holding, Alan.
For me having seven state histories before I got out of junior high, which included Arkansas, Tennessee, and Georgia, the Yahoos in Minnesota that think they have the Confederate flag have the Virginia Militia Stars and Bars flag.
Mm-hmm.
The Confederate States of America had a white flag with a little tiny red star in the corner. And it got replaced with one where they added a white red stripe on the edge because it kept being seen as a surrender flag.
Well, and it should be mentioned that the current Confederate flag became much more popular when the Confederacy and the KKK and Nathan Bedford Forrest and stuff were rising this. We were right all the time about, you know, this. And it became even a more ugly symbol of not just of the Confederacy, but of this belligerent Confederacy that basically felt as if it was we were right to be racist pigs all along.
Yeah, Dad wouldn't take us to see Stone Mountain because it was too bad of a place.
I mean, there is not enough.
KKK people.
Oh, it was, and Alan, thank you very much. I appreciate you holding. I appreciate being there. There's not enough explosives on the planet. Stone Mountain needs to be leveled. Stone Mountain needs to be leveled, and yeah. History is very hard. There's no one is perfect. And that's just the nature of history. You know, no one is perfect. Everyone has their flaws. Everything has their negatives. That's why what the first Minnesota did is so absolute. There's no downside here. They just did it. They just did it. And they saved the country. To disgrace their legacy by flying the Confederate flag, whichever variation you want to, in this state, I will be happy to drive your truck full of your crap to whatever southern state you want to go, and we can dump your stuff there because I don't want you in the state. And by the way, it's a travesty that you go to Wisconsin and you go to Iowa. I mean, these states as well put forward a lot of brave men to go fight to end slavery. And it's more prevalent there. It's more prevalent there. It is disturbing, to say the least. I will never accept the Confederate flag in Minnesota because you're disgracing the sacrifice of the first Minnesota and all Minnesota troops who fought in the Civil War to end slavery and beat back those traitorous bastards of the South. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Enough said about that. Let's go with some modern bigotry when I come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It never ends. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Brett, you brought up a good point once again. When it comes to flying the Confederate flag, you know, you got to put it in perspective.
Yeah, we don't really fly the flag of other countries we've been at war with, whether it's been Nazi Germany or the Spanish-American War or any others, World War One.
Would anybody be really surprised if this bar had a Nazi flag up it? I don't know if I would. You be really surprised by that? You're sure they're not going to have an Al Qaeda flag or an ISIS flag or maybe a British flag? But do we really know whether or not they have a Nazi flag up there? Because would I be surprised? I'm not saying they do, but would I be surprised if they had a Nazi flag? I don't know if I'd be surprised. I don't know if I'd be surprised by that. Well, I guess maybe they can only embrace one traitor to the country at a time. You know, so I guess that's the case. Do they have theme nights? You know, is that what it's going to? We got theme nights now for the bar. It's like, who's a big fan of the French Indian War? Oh boy, we got them right here. We got the enemy flags right here. I don't think it's that kind of crowd either, if you want to know the truth. I think it's much more 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Not sorry. All right. Hey, let's stop talking about racists and bigots from a long time ago. We got some bigots around here now, and we still have to call out. Thank you very much. A listener sent this one to me. I did not hear about this. Dakota County. You know Dakota County. It's a fairly large county. It runs really just south of St. Paul. West St. Paul, as a matter of fact, in Dakota County. Goes well south of Lakeville and Farmington. It goes way down there. It's a fairly substantial county. Castle Rock, that new town of Castle Rock. And a shout out to Marla, who's a friend of mine, who's down in Castle Rock. Waterford, Ranford, Meesfield, Hampton, Vermilion, Lakeville, Apple Valley, Rosemont, Burnsville, oh, you butte. Egan, Inver Grove Heights, Hastings, they're all in there. That's all in Dakota County. All right? Kind of give you an idea where this is at. Anti-LGBTQ plus activists are targeting the Dakota County library system, including the Wentworth Library in West St. Paul. Several incidents happened during Pride Month, culminating in a group speaking at the July meeting of the Dakota County Library Advisory. I bet that's a humdinger of a meeting. it's our breakdown of the Dewey Decimal System. Everybody, prepare yourself. It's going to get exciting. LGBTQ plus allies showed up in support of the library, outnumbering the anti-LGBTQ plus protesters. Once again, you are the minority. It just is. We have a lazy frickin' media that generally will always look for the frickin' howler monkey to put the camera on. We learned that with Little Ruse over in Chaska, and we've learned that, you know, with this. Pushback against the LGBTQ plus community has now grown nationwide with legislative efforts to ban books, limit healthcare, roll back support of LGBTQ plus people. Not just limited to red states, these anti-LGBTQ plus activities are vocal in Dakota County and even in West St. Paul. The Dakota County Library Director, Margaret Stone. I feel sorrow that someone feels compelled to stop others from borrowing certain library books. They may believe that they have the best intentions, but the library believes parents and caregivers make those decisions for their own children. A freaking men, girlfriend. Okay? I don't know what the Dakota County Library Director, Margaret Stone, was more unlikely experiencing, having to actually say that line or me going, girlfriend. The Library Advisory Committee meeting, a standing room only crowd of an estimated 150 people plus more outside, attended last Thursday's Library Advisory Committee meeting at the Heritage Library in Lakeville. A total of 37 people, including several teens, spoke during public comment period that stretched for over an hour. Since at least 2019, this is the first time the committee has had people show up to give public comments. The committee changed their rules to accommodate the many people who wish to speak, though they still had to cut the comment period short. It was great to see that in that people felt comfortable and welcome to share their comments and sometimes their stories, said Stone. I will admit the number was a little overwhelming, but for the most part, the meeting was courteous. The crowds turned out after the Dakota County Libraries saw a series of direct action protests against Pride Month displays and events, including letters specifically decrying LGBTQ plus inclusion. So what you got is, okay, when was the last time you were in a library? Do you go to the library often?
2 weeks ago, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I go probably once a month, once every 2 months or so. And you know, when you walk in, they have a display of, here's some books. Like, if it is, you know, Halloween, here's some great Halloween books for you. Same thing. You know, there's Pride Month. They're going to have LGBTQ+. Here's some reading material for you. Several times throughout June, the books in the Pride Month display were removed and hidden throughout the library in West St. Paul. In Farmington and Lakeville, separate groups checked out every book in the Pride Month display and left the same letter for librarians complaining about the books. As the books had been returned, notes warning parents were included in the books. All right, here. Moms and dads, this is the note that the people put in the books. Moms and dads, children belong in a community that respects their innocence and allows families to have conversations about sex and sexual attractions. The content of this book is propaganda designed to confuse children and lead them to sexual behaviors that are favored only by a small but vocal part of society. Once again, these people like to think that they are the majority. They are not. Children can be easily influenced by things they read, especially when it's from a respected institution like a library. Please review this book before your child reads it to determine if you agree with the lifestyle promoted in this book. By the way, it's going to be a hoot when your own kids basically they start going out and making their own decisions about their life. I'll let that be a surprise. I can already tell you, it's going to be a surprise for you people. So they put these, this is a note that they put in these books. The library did hold a Pride event in Hastings and participated in Burnsville's and West St. Paul Pride events without incident. Books in the Dakota County libraries are also being challenged at an increasing rate. Recent numbers, 5 books have been challenged so far in 2023, with 3 books in 2022, 3 in 2021, 2 in 2020, 1 in 2017, and 1 in 2015. Wait a second here. If you're the majority, how come all this right-wing rhetoric started right before Trump did in 2015? It's almost like it's completely made up and you pulled it out of your ass, you bigoted jackasses. That's just me. That's just me. Because it just seems like this is a modern day thing. It's like everybody's against this. The majority of challenge books deal with LGBTQ plus themes or with sex education. Challenge books so far in 2023 is This Book is Gay by Juno Dawson. The content about dating apps amongst the complaints. There is nothing to stop an 11-year-old child from using a sex app and getting raped. Okay. That's a book. This is a phone. Okay, I'm holding up my phone right now. Your kid can't get an app through a book. I don't know if you're aware of this. Are you sitting at home trying to touch screen a book? Because it's not working for a reason. It's not a old school Kindle, okay? It's just a book. You're, I think, more upset about phones and apps than you are about a book. Second book, you know, Sex, Bodies, Gender, Puberty, and Other Things by Corey Silverberg and Fiona Smith. For grooming our children for sexual deviance. Jeez. Wow. The Everybody book, the LGBTQ plus inclusive guide for kids about sex, gender, bodies, and families by Rachel Simon. The complaint. It makes teenage sex completely acceptable because Lord knows nobody ever had teenage sex before this book was published. Thanks, guys. Your rational arguments once again shine a light. The Gay BCs by ML Webb for child grooming. And Animal Crossing Deserted Island Diary number 3 by Kokashu Rumba for sexually suggestive images and language. Now, I want to make sure we just point out something. if any of your kids have video games at home or internet service or a phone or a computer or friends or eyes or cable. Yeah. I don't think the book's your problem here. But hey, you know, small minds. The county's library advisory committee reviews book challenges, known as requests for reconsideration. The committee reviews any reconsideration request and makes the recommendation to Library Director Stone, who makes the final decision. Since Stone took the position in 2016, the committee has never voted to recommend removing a book. If a customer has a concern about the particular title, the staff at the branch location are the first contact and we'll have the initial discussion. If that doesn't alleviate the concerns, then they are invited to complete a form request for reconsideration of material. Staff then compile information on the book and prepare a report for the committee. After the decision, the library sends a letter to the individual who submitted the request explaining the decision. You know, because here's the thing is, do you understand how libraries work? I mean, I don't know. I've never gone in there and said, I was going to try to get a Tom Clancy book, but now I got this one on gardening. They just gave it to me. So now I'm a gardener. Now I'm a gardener dealing with growing fruits and vegetables with an erotic nature. Have you seen carrots? Have you seen them? They're just grooming kids with the vegetable plate of sin. The debauchery salad has to stop here. Debauchery salad sounds good, doesn't it, man? And a little croutons on that? Oh, sounds nice.
Careful, you're going to give some ideas on banning gardening books at libraries.
But making dinner time a hell of a lot more fun. So can I get a restaurant in this town to put debauchery salad on the menu? I will eat there on a regular basis. Please let me know. Comment at am950radio.com. It doesn't work that way. You go to a library, you pick the books you want to read, then you've got your library card, and they're very helpful in trying to let you get that, and you scan the book, and you take the book, and you go home and you read it. No one is forcing you there. And if you really are concerned as a parent, which is your right to do, you can go with your kids to the library and say, you know what? We're not going to get these books, nor are we going to get the Nancy Drew books, man. She's a hussy. Sorry, Nancy Drew fans. I do not think Nancy Drew is a hussy. But you can do that. And then your kids have got the books there. I think you're all set. I don't think they understand how libraries work. Needless to say, more on the Dakota Cotton Library when we come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'm your debauchery salad of love. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Of course, the dressing on the debauchery salad is going to have to be ranch, because who could resist that? Ranch is a gateway. Next thing you know, it's French. Hello there. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I don't even know how the hell I got to that. Anyway, back to this. No one forces you to take a book out of the library. That's what it is, gardening. No one's forcing you to take a gardening book out there. You can choose what books you want. So them having them on the shelves, it's kind of your call if you end up with one. So whose fault is that? That's right, it's yours. And by the way, considering all you guys kept checking them out constantly, I mean, I'm just saying. Most of the crowd left after the public comment period, though a small contingent stayed in this is the Dakota County Library System. Stayed for the reconsideration of materials. The committee reviewed the four challenge books, voting unanimously to recommend retaining three of them and tabling the fourth until the next meeting to have more time to review it. The Dakota County Library Materials Selection Policy says Dakota County Library attempts to meet the needs of the total community, recognizing that some materials may be controversial. It is the responsibility of the individual library user to choose those materials which meet his or her tastes or needs. Ta freaking da! Users are free to reject themselves the materials which they do not approve of. However, they might not restrict the freedom of others to read or access materials. The American Library Association uses the Library Bill of Rights, adopted in 1939, and the Freedom to Read Statement, adopted in 1953, to give more direction to the role of public libraries and the materials they should make available in a free and democratic society. The Library Advisory Committee is a board of residents appointed by the Dakota County Commissioners that meets every other month to advise library leadership, offer community input, and review challenge books as needed. Here's a sampling of some of the comments of the Library Advisory Committee meeting from Joseph Folly in Lakeville. This is an egregious action that has no value in the community. It's clearly there for indoctrinating children to pride topics or what is generally known as grooming. Now, this is, or is it more like, which is now known as grooming? Sorry. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm just reading it off paper. Now, this is not to be critical of LGBT people. Go on. It sounds kind of like you are. It is critical of the amorphous pride group that nobody really pinned down in their efforts to bring children into it. It's like, you know, what it's okay. You think that there's like this collection of LGBTQ people that comes into town and all of a sudden rainbows everywhere? I mean, that's what you think happens? It's not like the Peanuts gang at the end of the Christmas movie where they just wave their hands around and they turn Snoopy's doghouse into the winner, you know, or the Christmas tree into the six. It doesn't work that way. It's just people being proud of who they are. You don't have to get the book, sir. Parental responsibility. This is from Ken Paulman from West St. Paul. Respectfully, in the first speaker, I appreciate your eloquence and your concern, but it is not your job to parent my child. A freaking man. Being able to go to her school library and public library to see stories and characters that represent her has been a wonderful experience and encouraged her to read more and has given her more confidence in her being herself in reference to Andrew Boston's West St. Paul, The Daughter Came Out. Wonderful story there. I want to thank you, Library Committee, for the pride displays around your libraries. By allowing for marginalized groups to see themselves represented in these public spaces, you have literally saved lives, said Megan Gooden. Very nice. It's not because we hate anyone or we're afraid of anyone or that we don't have compassion on anyone. You know, most of us are here are adults in the room and others are like very brave teens and kids. We can recognize and respect that each of us can make our own choices for ourselves sexually. Our main concern is when we see books that are targeting or sexualizing children, said Karen Millen of Lakeville, which once again, you don't have to check out and your kids don't have to either. There was a time when a couple of these kids told me that they were not wanting to live anymore because they were not safe in their places. They didn't have someone who could see them and love them for who they were. And sometimes these books were the places where kids got that feedback and they saw themselves clearly, said Mary Zilge of West St. Paul. I protect my kids. Every day I protect my kids from guns and strangers and from some aspects of religion. I don't need anyone else to protect my kids. I'm very capable, said Robin Strand of Lakeville, a.k.a. don't tell my kids what they can and cannot read. And once again, you do not have to partake in the debauchery salad. All you have to do is go in there and you can get whatever books you want. And that's that. That's just that. It's a freaking library. Native Roots Radio, I am awake. That's coming up next. We are back tomorrow. Till tomorrow. See ya.